Boy, you Derek Carr haters are going to despise this episode. We talked to the Raiders realist, CJ Anderson, who did all the math explaining why you can't blame Derek Carr for the Raiders' woes with a defensive as bad as we've had. We also discussed former first-round picks, why re-signing Carl Joseph is smart yet underwhelming, and how our run defense might actually possibly approach respectable. Check out our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. That really helps us when you help them. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And boy, do we love that you like, subscribe, comment, and click every little thing you can on our socials, on YouTube, and on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. We are just 14 days away from the 2021 NFL draft, which means, Soto, we're only 15 days away from throwing our beers at our television sets out of disgust for who we draft.
Yeah, history would lead us to that. We just haven't.
I was literally a history major in college.
Oh God!
And history. Yeah. And what did Mark Twain say? History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes.
Yeah,
the Raiders.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh man, it's. You'd like to think that, hey man, you know, they got this guy this year. He's gonna do this. He's gonna do that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just take a look at the last, what, five. They really haven't, you know, I mean, Josh Jacobs, you know, has done well. You know, he's not, I don't think you'd call him an elite running back in the league right now. He's good.
Pro bowler.
But he's, I mean, his numbers last year weren't eye-popping.
He regressed last season because our line was just Swiss cheese. I mean, I feel like, Jacobs has been good, and, I don't regret the pick, but a running back in the first round, when, everyone's finding, sixth-round running backs that fill in and play well,
Yeah, man, look, Marcus Mosher said it the best. He's an elite coach, but an absolutely terrible talent evaluator. I'm talking about John Gruden.
Yeah.
And it's a tough situation when you have the ego that Gruden does, because he's so elite at one part and he's so terrible at the other.
Yeah.
It's shitty, man. It's shitty. I don't envy Mayock's position right now, having to deal with that ego and, you know, just trying to fight him for the right players. Hopefully, I mean, he seemed to have done a pretty decent job building that, the offense, because the offense is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Let's see if he'll listen to Bradley and Mayock to build the defense.
What was the last first round pick that the Raiders drafted that you're like, nailed it? Awesome.
Perfect.
Mac, that was the last time?
Yeah. I was so scared when the Bills moved up.
I would say Amari Cooper the next draft. I was stoked. I was stoked for him.
I was cool. I was chill. Like, all right, cool. You know, we needed a receiver or whatever.
I mean, I remember being at work watching on TV and like high-fiving my coworkers. I was pretty pumped on Amari.
The Darius Hayward Bay pick really made me gun shy on first round wide receivers.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a little bit of a dropsies problem at Alabama, mostly on the easier catches, went up and fought for the tough catches, but one that I was like, dude, this guy, I was so scared because we have the same friend that is a Bills fan and the Bills traded up to four. And I was like, fuck, they're going to take Mac, dude. And they ended up taking Sammy Watkins instead. Yep. And then Mac dropped into our lap and I'm like, holy shit. We got the guy that I thought was the best player in that draft. And that was the last time.
That 2014 draft was a thing of legends. Khalil Mack, we got Derek Carr in the second round. You get a franchise quarterback in the second round. That's something special.
Doesn't happen every day.
Doesn't happen very often. Like going back, that was 2014 for Khalil Mack, 2015 Amari Cooper. Remember the 2016 first round pick for the Raiders?
Was it Carl Joseph?
Carl Joseph, who's back in the silver and black. He played. Remember, he was drafted in 2016. Played four seasons. We didn't pick up the fifth round option. Went in Cleveland for a season. Started 14 games, and now he's back. No details on his contract yet, but he was like, I think he got $2.5 million last year with the Browns. So probably around that, maybe a little less, basically pennies for what will be our starting free safety.
Yeah.
Really underwhelming, to be honest, like a guy that we didn't give a fifth round option to that Cleveland let go after a year. Look, he's fine, right? He's okay. He's average. He'll bring some like veteranship for our young DBs, which is good. I was hoping that the Raiders would go all out on a defensive end, and we did with Yannick Ngakoue, and go all out for a free safety. They went all out for one of them and just kind of like went with the safe minor move for the safety.
Yeah. You know, I mean, last week you were about to, you know, jump on the grenade when the grenade wasn't even necessary. I just wanted someone with the pulse, someone with a carbon life form at safety. We got a little better than that. The Browns defense wasn't bad last year. It was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Joseph did start most of the games for them. I think he only didn't start one because he was hurt. And then another one. I don't know why he didn't start that game. I'll have to talk to the Browns staff on that. Get him on the phone. And so the positives. The Raiders know what they're getting with him. I think he's better than what we thought. I think he was playing a little out of position. He was more of a strong when he was with us. Mm-hmm. Because
he's a good hitter. So I understand why they're like, hey, let's put this guy in the box. Like he can lay some
sticks. He's a little smaller. Yeah. And he does have good range. And also you have to take a look at who was coaching at that time. Was Gunther, who was notorious for putting people in spots where they're not going to be successful. And Gruden, who, like we talked about, isn't the best talent evaluator out there. Marcus Mosher even said it. He's an elite coach, but a terrible talent evaluator. And that's tough when you have a lot of control and you're very good at one thing, which boosts your ego, and you're dog shit at another thing, which, you know, you can explain away. Because you know, explain away to who you're fucking there for 10 years. Goddamn, you can do whatever the fuck you want. But I'm pleased. I still think that safety in round one or round two is on the board. I said it last week. I thought that what we're going to do is get somebody who is not going to shit the bed. Someone who can play the position and who knows what they're doing. And we're going to draft a safety early. And either find a way to keep all three or the odd man out between Joseph and Abram. Abram needs to show something this year. He has not played well at all. And I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm saying he hasn't played well for us.
And he has played like a bad player. Like let's be honest. Like he's played atrocious. Like
he's played bad.
He's played really, really bad. I like the move, but it's an underwhelming move. It's like, all right, let's fortify it. Let's make a statement at free safety. And we just watched all these good free safeties get, you know, signed elsewhere. And you're just like, what? How, like, was this the Raiders' plan all along? Like, was this really their plan?
The Harris one was the one that hurt the most because most of these safeties got franchised. Mm-hmm. So there's not really, we can really do about that. But man, Harris signing for 1 year, $5 million. Oh, that was a gut punch, man. And it's not like he even re-signed with his old team.
Yeah.
He went to a new team for that little. So shit, man. That was the one that hurt because I really wanted him, but I'm not mad at getting Joseph back because I think that Gus Bradley knows what he's doing. And if he's the guy that is back there, I think he's going to have a plan to be able to fit Joseph and Abram together and hopefully calm Abram down and get him to start playing a little smarter.
Joseph had 67 combined tackles last season. He's he literally has had one interception every single season he's been in the NFL. All five seasons, he's had exactly one interception. He had two fumble recoveries last season. So he's not like a ball hawk. He's not going to be, a big turnover monster for us. Like you said, he's undersized. Like he struggles covering tight ends because like the bigger dudes just kind of body him a little bit. But really good run stopper. I honestly believe our run defense with like Farrell's getting
strong.
Farrell's getting better and better at his pass rushing is always just going to be whatever, but he's a good run stopper. We have 97 defensive tackles. We've got to figure one of them's going to be good. We got all three of our linebackers back. Got to assume they'll improve under Bradley and not under the curse of Gunther. Now we've got Carl Joseph at free safety. Like our run defense, I don't want to sound crazy. Don't want to say anything I'll regret, but it's approaching semi respectable, decent. Perhaps
you would think. You would think. Again, you just go out there and perform. You have to go out there and perform. You can have all the pieces you want. If they don't fit together, if they don't play well, got to go out there and perform. And I don't think it's going to be a coaching issue if they don't go out there and perform, because this coach has already shown that he can do the job and he can build good defenses. So if they go out there, then it's going to be everyone's on the chopping block. To go out there and shit the bed again. So I'm not super enthused about our defense. I'm like the jaded old woman. Like I have to see it first. I don't get excited like that over this stuff. I got to see it. Even with the pieces there, I got to see it and see what they look like together.
Who in the defensive backfield do you think is going to be our best DB? Like, who do you think is going to shine? Do you think anybody does? And two, so who do you think will be our best defender in the backfield?
I think Trayvon Mullen.
Okay.
I think Trayvon Mullen. I think he was the most polished coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And he's played, he's not played great, but he's played better than the others.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have,
in the as land of the blind, he's the man with one eye.
Yeah, he's got one eye and that eye is cloudy. But I think he's going to be the one that's going to play the best. And it's not going to be for lack of coaching. It's not going to be for lack of scheming. It's not going to be for a lack of, game planning.
Mm-hmm.
Just got to go out there and perform now. Now he's got to go out there and get it done.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Trayvon Mullen will be, the one that kind of shines the most, or like he's the one with the most expectations too. Like if he's the one that doesn't deliver, that's going to hurt. Like Jonathan Abram, like we're just hoping he improves, like hoping a prayer that it was just Gunther. And he was basically a rookie last season after being hurt his entire rookie season. Can you get that guy under control? Damon Arnett.
One thing about that though.
Yeah.
One thing about that really gets me is he had the entire season, and Paul Gunther, his defense did not fucking change. It's the same defense from year one to year two for Abram. He had the entire season and off season to familiarize himself with that defense, and he still looked lost.
Yeah.
He didn't have to worry about game planning week to week and this and that. He had just had to study the defense, and what did he do? Who knows, man? We'll see if it's on the field or when it's time to get on the field, how he performs, how Abram performs, and if it was, mostly Gunther or if it was just, a very, 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 very poor pick.
Real quick before we get to our guest, you posted this in our notes. Julian Edelman, retired, longtime Patriot, and he tweeted, "I think people that work hard and legitimately do everything that they can, they tend to be luckier." So just hard work just pays off there, Soto.
Yeah.
Inspirational.
Apparently, including steroids is part of everything they can do. it's just when I read shit like that from guys who've been popped, who were like pissing hot, like it's come on, man. First off, you got to be an idiot to get popped in the NFL, number one.
Yeah. It's not a drug test. It's an IQ test. Like, yeah. You're getting tested. You know how they're testing you. It's not like the UFC where like you saw it as knocking on your door at 6 a.m. randomly and you're like, all right, piss in this. Yeah,
you're
this.
On, this is you're the on NFL, Twitch. Dog. Like, You're on Twitch and USADA knocks at your door.
I need you to piss in this jar. Thank you.
Yeah, it's oh God. When I see shit like that, it's like the homeless man that wants to be a motivational speaker. Like, dude, you can't even get yourself out of, you know, out of the shits. Just come on, man. I just always saw him as kind of a douche, you know, a little freaking haircut and like, oh yeah, I'm a model and I'm this and that, and get the fuck out of here. Retire. Just do whatever you want in retirement. Just don't say anything about hard work and doing everything you can when you're out there fucking using steroids.
I was just amazed he was able to tweet and see his keyboard with his head so far up Tom Brady's ass. Like, that's a real talent to be able to, like, how does that guy just not constantly have pink eye with how far up Tom Brady's ass his head
maybe
is?
Maybe his ass is just immaculate. Maybe
probably with that diet, spotless. He probably just like
spotless.
Yeah. Like, does he even shit? Did Tom Brady even shit with that diet? It just, his body just absorbs all the nutrients of everything that he eats at all times.
Yeah, Tommy Tuckrell is like, I don't know, man. I don't know how they didn't get him over to Tampa. Maybe there's too many receivers already. They seem to be buddies of the closest kind.
What are you insinuating there, Soto?
Really close friends, man. Really close.
They're best friends. I mean, best friends.
Something like that.
All right, coming up next, writer C.J. Baldwin. I stumbled on this article of his. It's from January. It's not a recent article. But he just really spaced out how bad the defense has been for the Raiders during Derek Carr's reign. Mm-hmm. And how even the best defense that the Raiders had, the best defense the Raiders had during the 7 years they've had Derek Carr, is 20th in the league. Still, like, bottom, like, you know, approaching bottom third of the league. That's the best one they've had in 7 years. And just how, like, Derek Carr getting the blame for the Raiders' woes is unfair when you look at how bad the defense has been and how no quarterbacks, except for one, only one quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, when all is said and done, he's the only one that's been able to take a defense that bad and go to the playoffs and win. So I want to talk to him about that. I know you're going to find ways to shit on Derek Carr. That's like your X-Men power, Soto. So I'll allow it. But I want you to hear from C.J. Baldwin first when you continue your tirades against D.C.
I am open to hearing about D.C. D.C., for me, he's just an average quarterback. He's an average NFL quarterback. I can name off the quarterbacks in the league right now. I'll probably find you 13, 14 that I would like to have instead of Derek Carr. And I think most people will say the same. And you can't go about statistics because it's a different situation for different teams. I know that's what you're gonna say. You're like, 4,000 yards and blah 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 blah. But I think he's an average quarterback.
I know my fact-based arguments really infuriate you, Soto. I know it's unfair. They're just saying he's not a player. Players. Like,
the thing that pisses me off is, like, these stats, a lot of these stats can be misleading. Like, there was a stat that was tweeted out by CBS Sports. They tweeted, most seasons in NFL history with over 500 passing attempts and 10 or fewer interceptions. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Derek Carr.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers had 9, Tom Brady had 6, Derek Carr had 4.
Okay,
but 4 seasons of 500 pass attempts with 10 or fewer picks.
Okay, well, take a look at this. Touchdown passes for these quarterbacks. So since Carr entered the league in 2014, Derek Carr, 170. Tom Brady, 222. Aaron Rodgers, 224. A lot more production there.
Yeah, Derek Carr has not thrown as many touchdowns as 2 Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Okay, exactly. So what you're doing with one stat is you're lumping him together with Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but you're like, oh, well, they're in the Hall of Fame. That's not fair to put them in the league with that. This is the shit that fucking kills me. It's like you could twist the number.
It's not wrong, Soto. It's not like they're trying to make a case that Derek Carr is like exactly the same as these guys. It's just like, oh, here's an interesting.
He's not in the same sport as
these
guys.
When you think of like 500 pass attempts, 10 fewer interceptions, you think of Aaron Rodgers, you think of Tom Brady, you think, you know, the Drew Breeses and Patrick Mahomes. You're like, oh, Derek Carr's in that mix as well in this specific category.
But that's not what it's meant to say.
Now, if you hate Derek Carr like you and it triggers you, I think it's more telling, Soto.
First off, I don't hate Derek Carr. I think he's an average NFL quarterback. I think he's average as a quarterback. What I'm saying is when you put together things like this, it's meant to feed the people who are Derek Carr backers and say, yes, look at that stat. He's just as good, or he's in the conversation with these guys. And he's definitely not that.
4 seasons, 500 pass attempts, 10 or fewer interceptions.
Damn 50 good. Less damn touchdown good. Passes. So, and okay, that's just the last 7 years. Let's take a look at the first 7 years that Derek Carr played. That was 170. Of the first 7 years, Tom Brady, 197. So like a whole season's worth of touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers, 225 the first 7 years. Now, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady was the first 7 years that they played. They didn't play their – Tom Brady didn't play his first year. Or he did. He didn't. I didn't include that year. But Aaron Rodgers, I didn't include his first 2 years because he didn't play those first.
And those are also quarterbacks that had defenses that didn't keep the ball away from their hands forever and actually gave them decent field position and got turnovers and gave them opportunities to score as well. Also a fact. Why aren't you bringing up those facts, Soto? Why are you trying to mislead people? What is it? What is this fake news? Why aren't you saying that?
Where are the numbers at the backup year? If we're talking about statistics, where are those numbers then?
I don't know. I haven't looked them up.
Yeah, do you have the average field position for these guys? Do you have anything else to back that up? Because, I mean, that's about the most out stat work I'm going to do. What I just did
Our brains are about to explode from doing the math. So that's what we got CJ Baldwin on to help us out. Here's CJ. All right, joining us now, he's a writer at franchisesportsmedia.com. You can follow him on Twitter at ManusBaldSpot, M-A-N-U-S, BaldSpot. His name's CJ Baldwin. He's the Raiders realist. He joins us now. How you doing, CJ? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys?
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you're doing great. Yeah, because most Raider fans aren't. generally not the case. But that's part of the journey. That's part of the fun. So I stumbled on an article you wrote. I believe it was back in January. So it wasn't a recent article, but I just stumbled on it. And the name of the title of the article was "The Raiders Realist: A Defense for Derek Carr, Something He Has Never Had." And I've been trying to like when you wrap your head around how bad the Raiders defense has been, like they've had a top 10 defense twice in the last 30 years. Like it's been like symptomatically terrible. What was the point of this article specifically that you wrote in January?
It was twofold, to be perfectly honest. I prefaced it at the very beginning of the write-up. The very first time that I had sort of tackled the whole issues behind Derek Carr was literally in his rookie year. Mm-hmm. That's the year we started 0-10. And at that point, they were 0-9. But I was kind of just delving into the stats because there was already, he's a bust. You know, we shouldn't have gone in that direction, even though we'd fallen to them in the second round. And it was one of those things where I was like, can we put some context on this? And it was at that point in time, I noticed after 9 games, they were on pace to have the single worst rush offense in the history of the NFL in a 16-game season. We were going to be at that time in pace, we were going to rush for around 992 yards. They were going to be the very first team since the 16-game expansion in 1978 not to run for 1,000 yards as an offense. The closest had been the 2000 San Diego Chargers, and they went 1-15. And at that point, they were allowing 28.9 points per game. So I'm like, we can't run the ball, and we can't stop anybody from scoring, but you're blaming it on the rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
Whose best offensive weapon is James Jones, who was a number 3 wide receiver with the Green Bay Packers. And it was just like, that's kind of that's an impossible situation. And I just, instead of trying to fight that, because there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of raw emotion in Raider Nation. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to put context on that. And so I flash forward, 6.25 years later, as I wrote, and we're at this situation again, where it's Derek Carr is, when you go to priority number one or blame number one, he's usually the target with a bullseye for the majority of the fan base. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, like you've said, 30 years, they've had a top 10 defense twice. And in the last 18 years, since Super Bowl 37, they have had a top 20 defense all of zero times. Yeah. And, you know, we point back to the 2006, that awful season with Art Shell. And it was like, well, that defense was very good, but that defense contextualized one was still number 20th in points. But that offense was so bad at only scoring 10 points per game that teams would literally get up like 13-3 and then sit on the ball because they knew we could not score the football.
Yeah.
So the whole context of that one defense was skewed, and then it showed itself the following year when Lane Kiffin got hired and they slipped back to 29th. So it was like, what I wanted to do was, the big thing that's always sort of dogged these conversations is Derek Carr is not a franchise quarterback. Derek Carr is not good enough. And I was like, well, maybe that's the case, but I'd be hard pressed to find a quarterback when a defense allows 26.5 points per game for 7 years to win football games. And so my whole thing was, okay, since I can't really compare him directly against other quarterbacks, because no quarterback has ever been put in that situation where they allow that many points for that sustained period of time, what if I took the all of the quarterbacks that he invariably gets told he's lesser than, put them at their worst, and then see how that stacks up? And so the 7 quarterbacks that I chose that are in the article, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan,
Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees,
Aaron Rodgers, and Peyton Manning.
Yep.
So the 7 quarterbacks that have played during that time frame, you take the worst defenses they've ever had combined, and they still score, or their defenses still allow fewer points at 26 even than ours have, you know, for one franchise over the 7 years. And their record is 52-60. His record is 47-63 over those 7 years. All of 3 games worse. Yeah. And I'm saying to myself, you know, what that's kind of in just laying out bare is that you could put any quarterback you want in a situation, but if they have no defense and they don't have the skill players necessary on a consistent level to score, they're not going to win. And, you know, I sort of combined that with the idea that last year he got a lot of criticism for, you know, they didn't score enough in the red zone, or, you know, there were certain things. We fumbled a lot, which was, and at the end of the day, they were the 9th scoring offense in the league. They were 10th overall, but they were the only team in the top 10 other than the Seattle Seahawks that did not score a single point on defense or special teams. They scored 434 points all on offense.
Yeah.
And they said with a straight face that this guy is not a franchise quarterback or not good enough to win. And I said, I disagree. And these are the reasons why. And so you find me a team that could give up 478 points, 29.9 points per game, and win, and I will be quiet. And in the history of the league, there's been no team that has won more than 8 games. There's only been one other team that matched that. That was the 2013 Chicago Bears. They somehow went 8-8, allowing the same number of points that we did last year. That's 121 years of evidence. It bears itself out that it's kind of hard to win in this league if you can't stop anybody. He can score a lot of points. There's been a lot of great quarterbacks that scored a lot of points. Dan Fouts in the mid-80s. Drew Brees from 2012 to around 2016. Scored a lot of points with those Saints teams. They missed the playoffs 3 out of those 4 years. They couldn't stop anybody. So to put the onus completely on him without the context of saying this defense doesn't stop anybody was patently unfair. And I just wanted to put it out there with numbers and a perspective that said this is why. And more importantly, at the end of the day, what I said to myself was, you know, do we really know what we have in Derek Carr? I'm still not entirely sure, because there's this idea that's been sort of ingrained in a lot of Raider fans that because we don't win, even though we have this terrible defense, that he can't get it done. And I say, Eli Manning won 2 Super Bowls. Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl. They got hot in the playoffs once they got in. Their team had an infrastructure. They didn't have to be great for an entire year. They didn't even have to be great every single playoff game. They just had to make the certain plays when they were put in front of them. Is Derek Carr better than Joe Flacco right now? Of course. And the whole point is, Joe Flacco was never an elite quarterback. He got hot 4 game stretch in 2012. He was Joe Montana. Mm-hmm. And they won a Super Bowl. And so the idea that it's out of the realm of possibility for your quarterback to be this Hall of Fame, slam dunk elite quarterback. Well, if that was the case, how come Aaron Rodgers hasn't gotten back to the Super Bowl in 10 years? It's not that easy. So, like I said, the whole thing for me was just putting the perspective on this idea that if it was really just as simple as the quarterback, they would have probably moved on from the quarterback and gotten another quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to sort of lay that out and not have it be emotion-based, but logic and numbers-based, and just let people make that sort of decision for themselves.
Soto is so triggered right now because he hates Derek Carr, and he thinks that if we had like Russell Wilson's quarterback, we would have won three Super Bowls in the last 7 years. He's so pissed. He's looking at him. Face is red.
Not
accurate. There'd be smoke coming out of his ears if he didn't have those headset on.
No, it's not accurate. See, this is part of the reason why I get so much hate is because RJ just fuels this. I could say something completely like fact-based and like fairly neutral. Like, you know, I don't think he's that great because of this. This is where I think he needs to improve. Why do you hate Derek Carr so much, Soto? Why do you hate him so much? Oh, my God. I can't
believe you hate him.
Oh, God. It's I look at the evidence and I see that, yeah, what I've said about Derek Carr, I don't hate Derek Carr. I don't hate him. I think he's an average NFL quarterback. I think that that's what he is. I think he's a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy, and he is where he's going to be. I think where he is right now is probably as good as he's going to get. And it's not terrible, you know, but I think that he needs a coach like John Gruden, who's solely focused on the offense, to be able to be that good. And I'm not taking anything away from other quarterbacks who, well, if you have a bad quarterback, you still can't be good. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's in a good situation right now, which is why he's as good as he's get.
He's not in a good situation. Literally no quarterback other than Patrick Mahomes has been able to win and go to the playoffs with a defense as bad as he's had. Literally no quarterback.
I didn't say anything about the defense right now. I'm talking about his offense, his offensive production. I didn't talk anything about him winning and losing games or anything like that.
God, you hate him so much.
Dude, oh my God. Okay, so my biggest gripe with Derek Carr is something that you brought up, and I think it translates not only in the red zone but outside of the red zone. Mm-hmm. They were a high-scoring offense, but there is some issue and there is something that needs to be fixed when you have almost double the amount of sub-30-yard field goals than the next team.
Okay,
that's a lot of failure within the red zone. And what I see and what, you know, Rory, when he was here, agreed. And RJ, you've said you've agreed post game in some games where he checks down too often when the play has literally no shot of getting the yardage he needs for a first down. Mm-hmm. And knowing how bad your defense is, you have to take a little bit. I'm not saying to be reckless, but you have to take a little bit more of a calculated risk. And that is in between the 20s. He's like that, but it magnifies when you're in the red zone, when the holes are smaller, you don't have as much time. The guys aren't going to be as open. That's the issue. That's my main issue with Derek Carr is he doesn't read the situation well. If I have a shit defense, guess what? I'm going to have to do some things that I normally wouldn't do because I need to be able to make some plays that I normally wouldn't have to make because I don't have any confidence that these guys are going
to
stop them.
Can you pledge to me, Soto? Can you make a blood oath? Over
here we go.
Zoom
listen
right
to CJ. Listen to this. Listen to this.
Can you do this at least? Can you at least promise me this? And CJ is our witness. You are never ever allowed to say when you criticize Derek Carr, well, he doesn't win. He hasn't gotten us to the playoffs. You can't say that anymore, right? Because literally no quarterback with a defense as bad as the Raiders has been able to do it. So can you agree that I'm allowed to donkey punch you anytime you say Derek Carr doesn't win? Because literally no quarterback can with that defense. You can be critical of Derek Carr, but you can't say, well, he doesn't win. He doesn't get us to the playoffs.
No, I don't agree.
Well, I'm going to donkey punch you anyway.
If I can interject.
Please. Talk some
please,
sense.
Please, you're the today. Guest. Jesus,
please.
No, I like a little lover's quarrel every once in a while. Sometimes you just have to sit and listen. But it's more about there have been a few select teams that have been really bad. The most notable is the 2000 Rams. the greatest show on turf. They allowed 485 points, I believe, off the top.
31st in the league that year, I think.
Yeah. They were dead last.
Well, yeah, 32nd, yeah.
But they scored 550 points. So that was Warner, that was Falk, that was Holt, that was Bruce. That they were loaded. And they probably they were a Super Bowl offense. And their defense doomed them to fail. But the whole point is, if you go in and expect that, that's a loser's sort of it's just not sustainable. And here's the thing about the red zone offense that I found kind of interesting when I was sort of looking into it. Carr, the first 4 years that he was here, whether it was Dennis Allen, Tony Sperano, and then Jack Del Rio with Musgrave and then Downing, they were top 12 all 4 years on the red zone those first 4 years. It's been since Gruden's arrived, ironically, that they've dropped in the 20s, 2018, 2019, and 2020, as far as their efficiency. So part of me wonders how much of that is Gruden's play calling.
Because
what I'll notice is, I don't know if you guys can vouch for this, but there's nothing that frustrates me more with this team than when I'll see a play that they execute great. A prime example for me was that little cross that they ran against Kansas City in Vegas at Allegiant, the Sunday night game, mm-hmm. that had Waller wide open on the left side, and he threw it, and then he put his finger up and he ran because he already knew that it was a score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't run that play the rest of the year. That play was money, and you have your best guy. And they schemed it up to where he's wide open. They did not run that play. I've looked at the tape. They did not run that play a single time in the red zone the rest of the year.
It's crazy because
wide
like
open.
Because Gruden has this notorious reputation for being predictable and running the same plays over and over. And yet, like a killer play with their best player against the best team in football, they don't run again.
Outsmarts himself. And it bugs me so much because I'll sit there and I'll see stuff that I'm like, well, he's clearly creative enough to come up with this. You know, I can think of individual plays like that clever little touchdown. It was sort of an offshoot of Spider 2Y Banana to Engel. The very first touchdown we scored at Allegiant against the Saints on Monday night, where he sort of it faked and it was a blitz beater. Mm-hmm. And Engel was wide open. He could have literally got on the ground and dog crawled in. He didn't run that play again.
Yeah.
It was like he goes back to the well and he tries to run 14 blasts. It's like Zach Crockett's not walking through that door, man. It's
and that's the one thing that I have said in Carr's defense is, and that's one thing I said that why it's difficult for the Raiders to run a lot of play action because they're so predictable, not only in their play calling, but in their play calling out of formations.
Yeah.
So it's not going to work. They're not going to bite on the run if, you know, you're in a passing, a historically passing formation for Gruden. But yeah, I agree with you 100% that Gruden's a big problem in the red zone. He's very predictable. But I've heard a lot of different things. Carr has different plays to come in the, you know, when he goes into the huddle and this and that. And I'm not giving them all. And it's not good for a show to be in the middle, I guess, right? I have you one way or the other. But I'm not giving them all the blame, but there are certain things he does need to improve on.
There's no question about that. The idea that he's somehow a finished product or you know, infallible here is completely – that's not the point I was trying to make. It's that when he's had a serviceable – just serviceable, because we've never finished better than 20th. When he's had a serviceable offense, he's a winning – or a defense, he's a winning quarterback. He's 25 and 21 the 3 years that they were under Del Rio, where they just didn't absolutely stink on defense. And the 1 year that I've actually had the most criticism of him, the year that I was actually with the pitchforks myself, was 2017. Because it felt like there was talent there, there was the ability to win there. And consistently, especially in the back half of the season, after the Kansas City game, after the emotional win over the Chiefs, he didn't deliver. You know, the Dallas game he gave away with the ill-advised dive. The Philly game with Foles was begging for us to win that game.
Yeah.
They had, what, 13 points the whole game? And he couldn't, and they'd have great field position. Marshawn Lynch had one of his best games as a Raider. He kept turning the ball over. It was one of those things where it was like, this is a valid criticism. I was up to here with him at that point because it was like, you know, we were built to be something great. And then there was all the scuttlebutt with the off the field stuff when I don't want to touch it. But that was the year where I felt let down. But we stripped this thing to the studs the following year. When you've got Doug Martin and Jordy Nelson out there as you're
running around.
Jeez. I mean, Jordy with his 36-year-old legs just like running through mud.
They might not have started in the XFL, man. And we got these guys out here starting, and it's like, okay, go win with this. This isn't chopped. You can't just take these spare parts and go create a meal with this. What are we doing? You know? So it was like you got to give him a mulligan for that. He gets sacked 49 times. Colton Miller is a turnstile the entire year when he's actually upright. And then you got Brandon Parker on the other side, who was like, who can we get to the quarterback first? They were literally
who's having a worse game today.
So it was like that was a throwaway. And they also happened to finish 32nd in defense that year. So to add insult to injury, they still couldn't stop anybody.
That was a rough year.
That one hurt because 2016 was like, what do we do with that draft pick? Because like 2016 was like, oh God, like we got something going here. He breaks his leg. Don't win the last game. Don't win the playoff game. You're like, all right, 2017, we can do it. Like that's what made it hurt even more so. It felt like we had something there for a minute.
That's the whole thing. It was like we got Madoff keeping it current right now. We got sucked in. We got
bait and switch. Yeah.
And what really stunk about that was just this whole idea that it felt like we were on the upswing. You know, it was like we got a generational talent in Mac. We've got a legitimate number one receiver in Cooper. And like a lot of people, they try to revise his history here. He's the only guy in the history of this franchise that had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons to start his career. Come on. The guy was a legit guy. He dropped the ball, but he was a playmaker.
Literally and figuratively.
Carr was, you know, he was deemed at that point the top 100. He was like number 11. He had his year there. He brings them back. We're winning. We look like we're going to scare the hell out of everybody in that postseason. I believe we would have played Pittsburgh if he had stayed healthy and we'd gone to Denver and won, which I thought we would have the last week.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh coming to Oakland on a Saturday night. There's no chance in hell they were winning that game. It was going to be us in New England in the AFC Championship. Our history isn't good against them, but we would have been there. We would have been that team. Yeah. You just never know. The point is we felt really deprived of that. And then that following year with what seemed like an improvement in the roster, you know, top to bottom, we fell flat. And what's the last couple of years has just sort of proven is it was an anomaly to give up that many points and to still be able to win double-digit games. That's the takeaway that I've had from the 2016 season. It wasn't so much that Carr was a fluke. It's the idea that you can't give up that many points and consistently pull games out in the end. It's really hard to expect a quarterback, no matter who it is, to have that handicap of saying you have to score X amount of points to win. And if you don't, we're not going to win. And so that to me has been like that was the driving force behind what I wrote and why I wrote it. Not because I'm a Carr stan, not because I think he's the greatest thing since, you know, LaMonica was thrown at the Wells. It's like, no, it's just that you could put anybody in that situation. Tell them to go score 27 a game to win for 7 years. Good luck with that. You know,
so I love it because that's what I'm saying is like, how good is Derek Carr? No one knows because he's never been on a team good enough to let him flourish. Right. So like, and that's what infuriates me. Not that there isn't very realistic things to criticize Derek Carr for, like the fumbles kill me. Like that is just brutal.
He needs to stop reaching for extra yards. Stop
right? Like you need to just throw bigger hands.
I agree.
You know, just have bigger hands. Problem solved, right? He's like that lawyer from Always Sunny in Philadelphia with like the big hand gloves. Give him some of those. But what infuriates me is the criticism that he gets that isn't his fault, right? So like statistically, you can't say it's Derek Carr's fault that the Raiders don't win, right? Because the defense has been so bad. It's really not even fair statistically to blame him for the red zone woes because he was good until Gruden came along in the red zone. So statistically, that tells me that's the case. Are there any other like criticisms you hear of Derek Carr? You're like, dog, the math doesn't add up to what you're saying. Like
plays, which was debunked last year. Mm-hmm. You know, two of his signature plays, you know, that touchdown on his torn groin to Aguilar against Miami, which should have been the game winner, not once but twice. And then also the throw he made to Renfro, I think against the Chargers, which I think was his best throw of the year at SoFi, where he scrambled out, he extended it and just threw that dime on a rope 50 yards down to Renfro. It set up a touchdown. It's like that is no longer the case. And you got to understand, Gruden's a guy who doesn't like a ton of ad-libbing. You know, for all the stuff we love to remember about Rich Gannon, he had the one great year in 2000 where he ran the ball. Mm-hmm. After that, it was like, hey, you need to stop this, because he also got sacked, you know, 48 times his first year in 99. And then it just, it was like, you got to be safer with the ball. And he just,
well, the running was the reason why he had to retire. Yeah, yeah, he got hit. Derek Brooks hit him and broke his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's, he doesn't, there's little, it's like you said, though, Juan, it's a kind of a sum of all things. Can he be a little bit more accurate with some of the ball placement? Yes. You know, the big thing a lot of people don't like is his deep ball. You know, there's a lot of times where
short,
he hits a guy in stride, it's a walk-in touchdown. Yeah. And he's been like that since he got here. That's my thing. It's like, he is what he is with that stuff. You know, it's like, is that one of those things? Is that a defining flaw? I don't think so. But yes, he could be, he could always be a little bit better with that. What happened was he missed a couple of throws his rookie year to Andre Holmes and to James Jones, and he stopped doing it. He was like, if I got a guy open, I'm going to make sure they catch it. You know, but my whole thing is it's there are things that can be improved. There are always things that can be improved. The problem I've always had is the idea that they are equitable. This can be an 80-20 thing. When you've got a defense as bad as this defense has been in the Gruden era, you've got to put the emphasis on that. And it sure seems as though the idea is literally to absolve the defense of its shittiness and just tell Carr to go score 35 and win. And it's like, we don't even tell franchise guys, the quote unquote franchise guys that you love so much, to do that. Brady has never been asked to do that. His worst defense was 25 points better than Carr's best defense in 2017. He's never had a defense that sniffs being as bad as Derek Carr, Roethlisberger either. It's like these two guys, 37 years combined, you know, what is it, 9 Super Bowls combined? Mm-hmm. They've never had a defense ever, 37 years, as bad as Derek Carr's best defense. And we're sitting there trying to compare them on a level playing field? Come on, get the fuck out of here. That's not going to happen. So that's my thing. And then
You switched me. You turned me.
Thank you. I was gonna say,
Derek Carr, we trust.
What new and creative ways are gonna use to shit on Derek Carr now?
See what he does?
The next few podcasts, when you start bending over, you're gonna be like a Russian gymnast bending over backwards, thinking of ways to shit on Derek Carr. When CJ's got the numbers, buddy. CJ's got the numbers. Now, if the Raiders have like a 7th ranked defense and still don't win in Derek Carr, what we'll have this conversation again.
That's what I'm waiting for. Because the thing about Mariota, here's the thing. He lost his job going 9-7 with the number 3 defense in 2018. That defense in Tennessee was great his last full year, and they didn't make the playoffs. And I was like, you guys can't even talk to me about these two guys. And the biggest thing about that was when he came in, yes, did he play well? Under the circumstances, coming in there dry like that, yes, he played well. He didn't play as great as people think. That's the whole backup quarterback. He got Vince Evans a lot as far as we really elevated.
Hey, Vince Evans won a lot of games, man.
That's my point. We really elevated. We made it seem like he came in there and was just completely, you know, all time as far as, like, get his bust in Canton. He did the same thing Carr did. Remember, it was 24-24 in OT. We go all the way down the field. This is Mariota. This isn't Carr here. Touchdown walks us off. First and goal at the 3, we end up kicking a field goal and we never see the ball again because we couldn't stop Justin Herbert and the San Diego or the Los Angeles Chargers.
God, that kid's good, man. Yeah, God damn, that kid's good. It's scary, man. It's scary. It's scary how good that kid is.
Well, you know,
fearless, man. Just fearless.
I love how you brought up, you know, Derek Carr not being able to extend plays a little bit, but still kind of disciplined. Because, like, I laugh my ass, like, Soto was like, let's get Russell Wilson. Oh, he said he wants to go to the Raiders. Let's give up 4 first rounders. Give him Carr. We'll get Russell Wilson. If Derek Carr's ad-libbing drove John Gruden nuts, John Gruden would blow his brains out if Russell Wilson was his quarterback. Just snap. Oh, I'm just going to run over here for 10 seconds now and just do something. Gruden would pull all of his hair out. Like the idea, like that was a good match, Russell Wilson and John Gruden. Like, it's like terrible, like oil and water. It's like the worst recipe.
That's precisely what it is. It's not a question of if Wilson's a better quarterback. It's the fit. Mm. There's no way that would fit. And the dirty little secret about Wilson as far as Seattle goes is, you know, those sack numbers are inflated by Russell Wilson.
Yeah. I said that too.
he's definitely held himself into a ton of sacks. Tom Cable suddenly didn't look so bad when a quarterback was getting the ball out on time. You know, it was like, because I was the first guy. I was like, man, what the fuck are we doing? Tom Cable, why are we? And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait a second.
No, he's the coach, man.
The quarterback throws the ball 3 seconds. He's keeping guys upright. So it's like, you know, Wilson would be dynamic, but he hasn't been as great as people have remembered the last back half of the last couple of seasons. I mean, their defense actually improved the last, you know, 6 to 8 games last year. But the offense, after averaging around 33 a game to start, they really faded and then faded out against the Rams in that playoff game. You know, and the whole thing is you got to factor in he's 33. He's, you know, he's not as young as springtime.
Taking a lot of hits.
Now. Takes a lot of hits. There's a lot of variables that go into it. And for me was, before we go and just completely flip, you know, because the natural inclination for Raider fans is we fuck up draft picks anyway. So it's like, no, you can't just assume that draft picks will be screwed up. So
I say we have to go the other way. We have to hoard draft picks and just in volume hope that eventually we'll land. Like don't like take like we need like 100 draft picks a draft to maybe get 4 of them that land. Like
take every single player possible.
We shouldn't go that way with it, you know? Just shotgun method. Just hope something lands.
And it's just again, it's when you're talking about relativity here, if he's giving you 27 a game, we don't need a top flight defense. Mm-hmm. Give him something that's, you know, 15 to 18. And that would be the first time. And that's my thing. If Bradley comes in, because I have my doubts about him, but if Bradley comes in and pushes this defense somewhere towards mediocrity, towards the middle, and we're still 8-8, 9-7, I'm going to start reevaluating just as hard as everybody else would be bound to. Actually, it would be 9-8 and 10-7. I forgot about the 17.
Yeah, right.
But that's my whole point. Can we to measure a guy, you've got to be able to measure him with all things being equal. They've never been equal for him in terms of the ability. I mean, you can go to any quarterback. Matthew Stafford had good defenses. And it just so happens it was the years Detroit made the playoffs. Yeah. It never fails. You give somebody support on off or as a quarterback and they win. And it's like they don't have to be the greatest of players. It's the infrastructure works, the team wins. And it's like it's the greatest disservice going to sort of sit there and put him on these teams where it's literally no chance to win and then pile on and say, well, why didn't you do more to offset the fact that we gave up 45 points to Tampa Bay? It's like, well, they're kind of good on their team too. You know, they play defense as well. So, you know,
my favorite part about the NFL switching to a 17 game season is now the Chargers get to break the record for having 17 away games every single new record, 17 away games for those Chargers.
It's so funny how they talk about Allegiant being this place that's going to be, you know, all I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it. Raider fans come from everywhere. And even if we're not like, I went to a couple of games against the Steelers where they had a big contingent. I was there in 2018 when we upset them. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of terrible towels, but it was like the noise, we rise to the occasion as far as that goes.
Yeah,
SoFi is going to be a walking away game for the Chargers. The best thing that they had going was that there was no fans.
yeah, right. They were loving life. They're like, oh, what? You got a bonus? Like, geez. So CJ, real quick, you said you had your doubts about Gus Bradley. Give us some high points here.
Well, the fact of the matter is, when they were at their apex, they were one of the dynastic defenses of all time. But you know, we don't talk in the distant past. You know, we don't have the benefit of being able to say we drafted Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wright, and Cam Chancellor. We don't have that. And more to the point, it's been diminishing returns for Bradley. That's what scares me, because they've had a superior roster across the board as far as their defense goes. And he's gone from, you know, top 5 to top 10 to top 15. And then he was outside of the top 20 last year. They've been sliding consistently the last 4 years that they were there. That always scares me when you catch a coach who, whether it's the scheme or whether it's the talent or just a combination of both, that's on the decline in terms of production. And, you know, my thing was I was pounding the table for Wade Phillips, not necessarily because I think he's a better defensive coordinator than Gus Bradley. I think it's all relative, but he has a history. He has a complete track record you know, literally every single, I wrote about this too. Every stop that he's been on as a coordinator that first year, their defense has been bad and it's made a big jump. And I mean, I'm talking places where they didn't have even talent, because the whole thing I kept hearing was, we don't have the players to run his scheme. The Falcons in 2001 had a complete mismatch of players from that 4-3 that they had played under Dan Reeves prior. Mm-hmm. And then they get there and they go from 31st to 6th with no, their best player was like Patrick Kearney, you know, a guy completely lost to history.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, he can scheme up things that I'm not sure. Bradley scares me because it feels like he's so much more dependent on guys being esoteric the way Gunther was, where it's like, well, the system says you got to do this, instead of I see an advantage I can just, you know, put you in and just completely have you take off and take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what Wade Phillips would do, was that in lieu of everything else, I got some guys who are athletic. I can make them do something that they're good at and play it up as, you know, as best as possible for them. And he always had that short-term success. And that's all we're looking for right now. You know, Gruden is dialed in to win now. We're not sitting there trying to reload. Like, he's trying to win now. He was trying to win last year. And it's just that defense fell completely flat on its face. And he can sit there and tell you anything that he wants to. But year three was his year to go in and get it done. And they just didn't, because they didn't stop anybody. Mm-hmm. So for Bradley, the whole thing is, I know that he's going to have a long leash because him and Gruden are boys. And that scares me, because it'll be one of those explained away things where he needs time, he needs his guys, and we've heard that for, like you said.
We didn't have an offseason, COVID. No team did! God damn it!
Yeah, Max Crosby pissed me the fuck off when he said all that. Like, listen, bro, we had a coaching chase. You were god-awful the first 14 games.
Yeah.
So don't give me that bullshit. Like, I'm not trying to shit on anybody here, but let's just be honest about what's
except
going
Derek
on.
Carr. You're here to shit on Derek Carr.
This fucking guy.
Jesus. But no, your point is very well taken, because that's exactly what it was for me. It's one thing, I've always said this with the Raiders defenses. It's one thing if you just don't have the guys to do it. Like, okay, you're in position, but a superior guy makes a play on you. You can live with that, because it's like, oh, the scheme doesn't suck. It's just, we don't have the horses to run right now. But when you got guys like Abram, who's completely lost in space as Mahomes is scrambling up, and he completely aborts his coverage and leaves Travis Kelce, of all people, wide fucking open for a game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing? You know, what exactly are you coaching them to do in situations? We have no situational awareness. We have guys who don't seem to be able to grasp a concept of a defense. And then you have guys who try to freelance and completely look lost in the sauce when they do it. Because there's nothing I hate more than Raider defense, where you have guys turning around pointing like, what happened there? What, you know, I've seen that for 20 years now, and I'm sick of it.
Yeah, you know? That's the thing that we were talking about a couple podcasts ago. Even a couple idiots like RJ and myself are looking at these guys and like, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know where they're supposed to line up. They don't know who they're covering, because everyone's pointing at everybody else.
Yeah,
and they're chattering up into the snap. They have no idea what they're supposed to do. They're telling each other. It's like, you know, you're playing high school ball, and the guy that doesn't play comes in, and you have to tell them what to do after every play call. You have to, this is what you have to do. Do this. It's like that's what they're doing. And that game. Oh God, that shit made my penis soft, man.
That's the one hope. Like, that was my biggest positive with Gus Bradley is. A simple defense that and a coach players like you got a lot of young players, a lot of moving parts, like at least simple, because it's so opposite of Gunther.
I'm hoping for.
Will Compton said on his podcast, like, yeah, we'd have 25 to 30 new defensive plays for third downs only every single game. Like
the whole entire place open every game, no game specific. Like, what the fuck? And I'm super pissed off. Why the fuck is Gruden letting him stay for that third year?
Right.
What the fuck? They were shitty the first 2 years. He didn't do anything any different. You don't see any growth with these players. You see them regressing. And, oh, God, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. I do like Bradley for a couple of different things. The last couple of years, I'm not going to totally put on Bradley, because a couple of his players on his best two players on defense were hurt.
There were some
almost
injuries,
the entire year. Yeah. I'm still dying. I would have loved Derwin James on our team. Hopefully hurt.
Yeah.
He's there, and we did take him, but I'm not going to go back. I can't go back. But better teacher from all accounts, a lot better teacher, a lot better game planner than Gunther was. You know, smart guy, just as hard a worker. And he has head coaching experience, which when you're a defensive coordinator, you need to have that if you're working for John Gruden, because John Gruden ain't going anywhere near that defensive room.
Right.
So you have to have that ability to take everything together and come all your assistant coaches and put it all together.
Right.
You're not going to get any help from Gruden.
It's like that Buddy Ryan, Mike Ditka dynamic. Yeah. He's going to basically have his own show to run and he's got to be able to do it. I agree with that. I just, you know, at some point, the fact of the matter is when it really boils down to it, the players are going to have to be better. There's, and it's like, we can talk two ways from Sunday, but there's been enough invested and, you know, Farrell's got to be better. And I'm not just talking about run defense. You know, there's plenty of guys who are bold power rushers who can get more than 4.5 sacks. You just have to be more productive. You know, Littleton, he flashed a little bit at the end of the year when Rod Marinelli completely simplified the defense and just sort of let him run to the ball. That was promising. He didn't do anything special. It wasn't like $13 million worth, but
he also didn't have Aaron Donald playing in front of him.
This is very valid, but he did look like he actually belonged on the football field. It was like, okay, we've got a little bit of something there. You know, the guys just have to be better. And Ngakoue has to be a guy who can be a 9 to 10 sack guy. You know, it's like Kwiatkowski has to be healthy and they're going to have to hit on some guys. I mean, the fact of the matter is, they're an incomplete defense. Even if everything maxes out with Bradley in terms of, you know, they pick it up, it fits the scheme, they're suitable. There's still a talent deficiency as far as the, you know, the 11 guys that we're going to run out. And ultimately, we're going to have to bring in some guys. We're going to have to grab some guys that completely sort of, you know, overachieve a little bit. Because that's how Seattle won. I mean, Sherman was a fifth-round guy. Bobby Wright was a fifth-round Wagner. Bobby Wagner was a fifth-round guy. You have to hit on some guys. Cam Chancellor, they got in the third round. It's like they're going to have to nail some picks because the foundation of that, the best defense he's ever had, was drafted, developed, and then sort of put out there in-house. So, you know, that's my thing is we have guys, but they can't just be just a guy.
They got to perform over their head.
Yeah.
A quick side note on Bobby Wagner. I was at the Utah State USC game. Bobby Wagner had like 20 tackles. I'm like, right. Who the hell is this guy? This guy's all over the freaking place. He was bigger than their freaking lineman. He was huge. He looked big compared to everyone else on the team. And that guy was a freaking man. I don't know how he slipped to the fifth round.
Fresno State guy, he used to be a problem. I know firsthand. You know, it's like this guy's a dog. So we didn't like playing those Utah State teams.
For sure. Well, I've been saying it ever since Gunther got fired. Like, you're in a wonderful position if you're Gus Bradley because you're taking over the worst defense ever. So if all you are is just – kind of bad, that's a drastic improvement and we're all gonna be happy. Like, if you can take the defense to like 25th, I'm doing cartwheels in my hallway. Like, all right, hey, we're only in the bottom two-thirds instead of like the absolute worst. We'll see. Time will tell.
If we're just functionally bad, not because it just got to the point last year, and I've been there before, where it's just, can we hold them to a field goal? We're literally on defense hoping just not to allow touchdowns. You know, it's like, that is a terrible feeling to know that they just can't stop a nosebleed. It's just, you know, can a guy drop a pass?
I'm expecting like, let's see if the quarterback can float one for us. Let's see if he can float that cross.
Give a running back hit a sprinkler, please. Like something. Anything. You know, Littleton's not going to be there. All right, CJ, you've done the impossible. You've turned Juan Soto from the biggest Raider hater on planet Earth to now his biggest disciple.
See this guy?
Well done. Very well done. His name is CJ Baldwin, the Raiders realist, as real as it gets. You can follow him on Twitter at Manus Baldspot, MANUS. And you can also.
It's Manu, man. Like Manu Ginobili. Manu's Baldspot. There you go.
I was just so tempted to say Ma-anus. That's how it's spelled. My anus.
Don't trust RJ.
I don't want to get him fired, man. Don't
trust him. That is Bald Spot. Read him at franchisesportsmedia.com. CJ, you are absolutely fantastic. We'd love to have you back anytime.
So my pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, CJ. Appreciate it.
Big thank you, CJ Baldwin. That was great. I can't believe he turned you into a Derek Carr lover from his biggest hater. That is some fine work, CJ. Very well done.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, all that's left is what up, Winbags?
Let's do it. All right, Sam A. You got to start with the fluff.
Yeah, right.
Always, if you want to get on, just fluff us a little.
Flattery gets you everywhere.
Everywhere with us. Sam A. Hey, dudes, I just started watching your show. This is my new favorite Raiders show. Keep it up.
What the fuck, Sam A? It's episode 22. What took you so long?
Jesus. Episode 21 was his first one, I think.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what we got here. What will the 2021 offense look like? Jeffrey Hiles said, the key to the offense is not to waste red zone opportunities.
I'd say that's easily the biggest issue with the offense.
Oh, yeah. I think it's
turnovers were not great, but not terrible.
No, I mean, they were in the top third. They didn't turn the ball over that much.
The run game kind of regressed a little bit, but I think that's, you know, the offensive line being Swiss cheese and getting hurt and, you know, random.
I don't want to call them Swiss cheese. They were terrible. They were serviceable. They were good because a lot of the guys that they were playing, we brought back.
Yeah.
But they just didn't, run block very well.
Yeah.
And, you know,
pass blocking was good. Run blocking, not great.
Not great.
Jacob's hurt.
Didn't seem to have that explosion at the line of scrimmage that he normally has.
Our rookies didn't really develop like, you know, we hoped they would. They were rookies, you know, but
that's just
development. But as far as like something tangible, like an X's and O's
definitely
problem,
the red zone. Definitely the red zone. And CJ said it too, man. It's tough. It's tough when you dial up plays that work and you just abandon them for whatever reason. And we said the same exact thing. Put everyone on one side and Waller on the other. And okay, you have your best guy stop our best guy. And we got three chances. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we did when we played the Saints. We put Crabtree on the bottom and said, "All right,
we need to
fucking stop them."
Blackjack Del Rio,
fucking Blackjack, thick dicking it, just laying it on the table. All right, here we go. Okay, his name is Titus Flavius Vespasianus.
How are you able to pronounce that so well?
We butchered Titus's name the last time, so our apologies, Titus. Titus Flavius Vespasianus.
He literally wrote it phonetically.
Yeah,
in the comments,
idiots like
so we can get
RJ
right.
And I can get that shit right. So it's thank you very much for your comments, Titus. I hope that we didn't butcher your name as bad this time. So he wrote, do you guys see the Raiders being particularly risk averse in the upcoming draft due to the ongoing COVID restrictions, the need to get solid players on defense and the O-line, and having one less preseason game to evaluate players who may be more boom or bust types? Also,
let's do that question first. The short answer, no.
No.
I don't see them being risk averse. I mean, this is the thing. They're whatever John Gruden's whim is at the time.
Yeah.
That's what it
is. Right? And if it's not his whim, it was his whim to let Mayock and whoever else make the call.
Yeah.
You know, because he wasn't super sold on somebody. My ask, my pray right now is that everyone who John Gruden has a bug up his ass about gets taken. And then there's just nobody he's super in love with. So we take
Mayock do his job.
Yeah, Mayock and hopefully Bradley do his job, and we can get somebody who can really help the team if it's on the defensive end.
I think we go tackle one, safety two.
Look,
I think it's best available of those two positions.
If Morig is available at 17, which I think he might be, there's enough tackle depth in that class to get a tackle in the second round. But the safety depth, you're not going to find anything anywhere near Morig in the second round when we pick. So I would go that way. But the fuck do I know, right? Continuing. Titus also writes, also, is Richard Sherman willing to play cornerback?
Only willing to play cornerback.
I had heard early in the free agency process, people talking about his age coming off injury because on the being on the downside of his career. Do you think he would be able to, or willing to make the switch to free safety under Bradley, like Rod Woodson and others have done back in the day?
I don't think that's the issue. I think Sherman just wants money. Like what he's asking for. I think that's just the major issue. Now, Richard Sherman is his own agent. He doesn't have, you know, a lawyer that he's paying 3.5% to that's saying, dog, this is what you're going to get. Like, this is the best you're going to get here. Take the money, go. Cause yeah, he's older. He's like, the legs aren't there anymore. Like, I got sold on Richard Sherman from that podcast that he did, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Gruden came on and he's like, we're looking for an alpha presence. And just like, oh God, Gruden could sell a used car to a blind man. Like, it's brilliant. So it's like,
you went blind today, huh? You get a couple blind references today.
I don't know. Maybe it's because he keeps like smudging your glasses and I keep thinking of your eyes.
I couldn't see the whole CJ interview.
I think it's just purely a money thing. I think he's willing to move if the price is right. And I would dig him in that spot. Like, again, I wanted a veteran free safety. And I wanted a game-changing veteran free safety. We got half that. We got a veteran free safety in Carl Joseph. Not, okay. You know, it was underwhelming, but again, hopefully that we
compared to what we had,
it's an improvement.
It's a vast improvement to what we had.
It is.
And he knows Bradley's system. He knows that a lot of safeties played up and there was a lot of floating around with positions and switching positions in that backfield when they were with Seattle. Well, mm-hmm. They had the players to do that. Okay. Last piece. Thanks for the great podcast. Keep up the great work. Go Raiders. And then he says, Titus Flavius Vespace. Iannis. Vespasianus.
We still can't get it right. And he wrote it for us.
Vespasianus. Vespasianus. I think I got it. Vespasianus.
All right. He'll leave us a comment and see if we got it right or wrong. All right. That's it for us. We'll be back next week. We'll talk a little draft, wrapping up free agency. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for tuning in for this episode of the Autumn Windbags. Thank you to CJ Anderson for joining us. And please remember to like, comment, subscribe, and click on every little thing you can on YouTube, on social media, and on our podcast platforms as well. All right, until next time. Later.